Hey, hi, hello, friends and listeners of the Unschool Files podcast. I'm your host, Megan, and you are listening to episode 36. I am so glad to be recording this. I had to take a bit of a break. The winter has been brutal on me, and it seems like it's been the same for many of us. So wherever this finds you, I hope that you are caring for yourself, drinking plenty of water, and getting as much sunshine as you have access to. As you can tell, I have a bit of a lasting rasp in my voice, but we are rolling with it. My calendar's booked, the calls are set, and I have missed sharing this space with you. Bringing you conversations with unschoolers and self-directed learners from around the world so that you can get a glimpse into what it is like to live and learn without school was the original mission of this podcast, and I'm glad to be back in full swing and with a full calendar. My guest for this episode is a mother of two self-led daughters and my friend, Lane, from the Northern Peninsula of Michigan, where she lives in a snow globe town on Lake Superior. We have a great discussion about unschooling, self-directed education, and you get to hear a bit about how unschooling unfolded for her and her family. Join me in welcoming Lane to the podcast. Welcome to the Unschool Files podcast.
Hi, thank you for having me.
I am so, so excited to finally be recording with you. This has taken us a minute or two.
Life got in the way a little bit.
Yes, it has. It's been an odd season, but I am coming back from a sickness, and so my voice is a little, well, let's call it like the Phoebe Buffay, Friends, sort of raspy. We're going to go with that.
I like it.
Instead of recovering, chest rattly kind of
iggy. Right.
All right, why don't you start out by maybe telling listeners a little bit about yourself and your relationship to unschooling and self-directed education?
Sure. So my name is Lane. I live in Northern Michigan up on the shore of Lake Superior. I have two children. They are 12 and 9. They have been homeschooled in some form from the start. We lived abroad during when my oldest daughter would have begun kindergarten, and I had that sort of as an excuse not to put her in school and gave us a chance to experiment a little with what homeschooling would be like. And as I entered the, what is a rabbit hole of homeschooling research, I became really interested in the concept of self-directed learning. Because one, I had never heard of it. And two, the science that supports it and the psychology that supports it was really compelling to me. And as I looked at my children who were at the time, you know, very young, like 5 and 2 or whatever, it was very obvious to me that that is how they lived, like learning, living,
yeah,
all in one, you know, motion all the time, never separating anything. And the more I, you know, dove even deeper into the topic, the more I started to reflect on my own learning path and how that affected me as an adult in, you know, both positive and negative ways. But one thing I could absolutely say it was not was self-directed at all. And that my personality type and my attachment to, you know, what became like to me, you know, the drug of praise and incentives and sticker charts and straight A's, how that really formed a lot of my behaviors and it really formed my path. And so now my kids are, I guess, what would be middle school and, you know, middle of elementary school ages. They've still never attended school. And the way we're doing learning did evolve into an unschooling style. Absolutely. After some initial dabblings in homeschooling curriculum where some of them required me to sing and stuff like that. And that was, that was just a bridge too far.
That's a no.
That's going to be a no for me. Yeah. So it became more and more apparent with me as they grew that it would become more challenging for me to trust in their ability to self-direct and in our ability to learn together, but that it would give increasingly positive returns. I mean, I sometimes give the example of my oldest daughter learning to read. She was functionally illiterate, aside from some sight words, some three-letter word type of things, until she was close to nine. It was not easy for me. I don't want to like gloss that over. I was always Googling it, talking to a couple of my friends who are in education and do, you know, like literacy support, and none of the like important red flags were appearing. So I was really just letting her do it on her own. And eventually some of her friends were into Wings of Fire and she wanted to know what it was all about. She started with audiobooks and following along in the books with her finger, mm-hmm. you know, on the page, and she literally learned to read. And she's within 6 months was reading, I don't know what the levels are because I'm that kind of out of the loop of school, but like was reading chapter books and like now could read anything you put in front of her. And that's not to say like there aren't struggles and I'm not trying to gloss anything over, but it really gave me a firsthand insight instead of like reading on someone's, you know, Instagram page or blog,
right,
as to how that process can work if you trust it, knowing that that trust is really hard fought inside of our brains. That was such a long show. I'm sorry.
No, that was wonderful. It was so wonderful. Okay. I think I have mental notes from starting from the top, actually.
Okay.
Like you mentioned research science and things that supported what you were kind of watching unfold. Do you have anything that you can remember off the top of your head that we might point listeners to in case that was a curiosity of theirs?
Yeah, the things that like the resources that really drew me in from the start are pretty like unschooling 101 syllabus type of stuff. Peter Gray, I followed very like I read the entire backlog of his blog that was on, was it Psychology Today? Yeah.
Psychology Today. Yeah.
Yep. And then of course, you know, bought his book. And then that like through all of his citations led me to John Holt and some of just this, I guess I don't want to say standard, but you know, once you're into learning about self-directed education, some of the really classic thinking about learning in a different way. And then that led me, you know, later stages to connecting in community online with other current living the life unschoolers like you. I mean, that's how we became friends. Following podcasts like Fear of the Free Child and with Akila, and just really the most interesting conversations unfolding in my brain as they were speaking to things I had both never thought of but instantly knew were true. It's been really fun and it continues to develop. And I think that's what's really appealing to me about this particular path, as opposed to a more set either homeschool curriculum or public school curriculum or whatever, is that the point is that there is no end. There is no right way. There is no, you know, ideally for me, there's no dogma. And so I can just continue to learn and evolve as I come across information. And as my kids, like we've talked about in our private conversations, as they get older and older and have their input into what's going on with their life and the connection at the center of our relationship, which I hope is the point of unschooling, it lets them feel that they can share that with me and we can continue to adapt.
Connection and relationship being the center of unschooling, no matter how it kind of unfolds or what kind of supplies you have around your house or what other pedagogies may have informed you prior to coming to unschooling. The dogma stuff is just like, it can be so intense, but dropping that and really just focusing on relationship and connection is just where it's at.
Absolutely. And I think that every time I'm having a really hard, you know, day or week, either with my kids or just in my home, if I really am honest with myself, I've not put proper attention on that part of it, on the relationship piece, on asking myself, like, is this connective or disconnective, what I'm trying to share with them or ask them to do? But it's easy to slip into that when you're in kind of when you yourself as a human person are having a harder time. We slip into these old patterns of believing that we're an authority over someone younger than us, believing that we know something that they don't know. It still comes up. Like I'm 12 years into this and it comes
up. Same here.
Yeah.
Same here. Actually, this week it came up. I just out of the blue felt nostalgic that my now 17-year-old, at one point in time when he was about my youngest age now, who's 11, he was in this co-op class that he wanted to be in, and they made an animal cell out of like edible things. So it was fun, it was engaging, it was cool looking. And I felt nostalgic, and I was like, hey, mentioned to both of my two younger children, do you guys want to make an animal cell this week? The blinks that were given to me were like, why? Like, it was just out of the blue. And I
know.
was like, well, your brother did this when he was about your age, and I just thought it'd be such a fun activity for us to do.
I feel for us when that happens because sometimes it's like as you're saying it, like as it is coming out of your mouth, you're like, they don't want this. What am I doing?
You already know. You already know. And you're like, why am I saying this? Okay.
But you know what? It's
So
important to
really.
ask yourself, like, why am I saying this? Because one thing that I think everyone underestimates when they even consider homeschooling to start or unschooling eventually or whatever path they take is like how embedded schoolish types of thoughts are in us. And even when we've seen, like, you and I have like over a decade of watching this like happen and unfold and everything actually be okay and there's evidence and we can lean into it still creeps in there that like, well, but what if they're behind? Or what if I've, you know, what if I was wrong? Or, you know, what if like they later wish they'd have known X, Y, or Z? Or, you know, and taking everything on as like a personal responsibility to predict every outcome that could ever happen is exhausting and not useful.
It is not a useful, it's not useful for our brain, I think, to go into that kind of headspace of like spinning and questioning and like following these little paths of stories that you are quite literally making up entirely on your own. It's possible that any one of those stories could be true in the future, but
It
to
could be.
predict it ahead of time is like, I don't know. It kind of reminds me of that. There's a quote in Akilah's book. And she says something to the effect of trading in our past and our present for an idea of a well-designed future. And it's always stuck with me that we in, as parents get in that headspace of wanting to trade in who they are right now, looking at them at this very moment, and everything that we've experienced in the past for some sort of well-designed, predictable future. And it's just not possible.
Yeah, and I think that it can be we can be doing it really in a sort of sneaky way and not even noticing we're doing it, like very subconscious. Like, you know, we look at things they're interested in, like hobbies or, you know, just rabbit holes they go down in this moment, today, whatever, you know, this week. And even when we're not intending to, there can be this one lens inside of us that puts an expectation or even a desire on what that could become for them in the future. Like, oh, they're interested in baking. Maybe that'll turn into, you know, or they're like, oh, they want to play the guitar. And what has been more true for me when I let myself release that is like, we don't need every moment we're in right now to inform us about a possibility of the future. We don't need every outing we take, every hike, every whatever to be a field trip. We don't need every hobby to have a life lesson. Some things are only in the moment, and the fact of how they may or may not connect to the future, whether that future be in a month or in 10 years, is not the point. And for me, especially when I'm in any place of doubt, I think that's immediately where I go to, like future projection. If we do this now, it might mean that later. If we don't do this now, it might mean that later. And I think there's maybe a little bit of extra pressure when you've chosen a different path.
Oh, for sure. The accountability is 100% on us.
to validate, you know, all of your choices, whether that be inside yourself or, you know, proving it to your community or your parents or anyone in your life who might not be sure about what you're doing, that everything's going to be okay. Like, look, they're going to be okay. They're going to be fine. Look, they can read. Look, they can do this. When in reality, like, I could put my kids in school today and that doesn't guarantee any particular outcome from them. But there's something about the uniformity of that experience that makes us feel it might.
Right. I think there's a false sense of security and comfort in that collective experience.
Right.
That, like, if it doesn't work out, well, you did the thing that everybody was supposed to do anyway.
Right.
But then that turns into like a, if it doesn't work out, well, you were a personal failure at that point because you as an individual could not hack the system.
Yeah, we showed you the system. You didn't figure it out. That's on you.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wanted you to actually say more about how your experience and your personality was developed by a lack of self-direction. And like, I mean, would you call that micromanagement or what would you characterize it as?
No, I think what's really interesting about it is, obviously looking at things through the lens of retrospect is a very particular viewpoint and it doesn't always take into account the context of the time. Right. And, you know, my parents were both working full time. I don't even think they'd probably ever met a homeschooler, let alone heard of self-directed education, you know? And so I would have never heard of it. It wasn't even in like the air. So I don't think about it as like something that happened to me, but I do feel like I mean, I'm an oldest child. I'm sort of have an anxious disposition. You know, we're sort of just born with these certain dynamics. And for me, I think that as soon as I figured out the system of like adult praise and of what are considered good behaviors, I was immediately and for decades incredibly attached to checking off every single possibility of those boxes. Like how, you know, what are the ways you get praise? I will do those all. thank you. And I think what happened is I was so focused on those measures being a reflection of my worth as a person that I actually had no idea once I left into the world what I was interested in. Like actually, I couldn't have even told you that. And honestly, if you would have asked me that question, I would have only been able to answer it in the frame of what am I good at? And those are not the same all the time, right? Because
they are not.
Yeah. Because particularly when you have figured out the system, right? The system of tests or of, you know, what behaviors make adults think you're a nice kid to have around or whatever, you can just play it like a game. It has no actual connection to whether you're enjoying it or not. What I was enjoying was like the serotonin hit of it every time. But I sort of left high school and was in college and was meeting people who had like hobbies, for example, and like very strong interests and like collections and like niche knowledge of something that would have never been useful for school. Mm-hmm. And I was like, whoa. I have none of this. I honestly could not even give myself time or permission to consider what that would be for me because I also needed to get straight A's. You know, I once got a B in a poetry class of all things in college. And I like wept. Oh. And I think about that now. And what's so sad about it isn't even that I was crying. It's that like, I love poetry. I'm sure I could have got so much out of that class, but I didn't because all I could think about was my performance in relation to poetry. I couldn't think about poetry. Right. So what ended up happening is I just like could never disengage from that. I went from university straight to graduate school. I, you know, of course worked hard and studied and whatever, but to be honest, it was sort of just an exercise. Like I could do everything they needed me to do and I would just keep doing it. And it ended up in a situation where for the first time in my life, a couple years after grad school, we moved abroad and I found myself without a job and without school. And there were no, there was no one measuring my performance.
Yeah, there was no forum for your performance.
There was nothing. There was no one to tell me I was doing a good job. There was no one to, you know, promote me. There was no one to tell me like you get extra credit. And so I literally had to just like look around. There wasn't even, people aren't gonna believe this, but there weren't smartphones. There was no, there wasn't even like Skype. I had to just walk around and look around and be like, what do I want to do? An actual literal question. And I did not know. Like I did not know. And for me, that began a pretty intense few years of asking that question, like over and over, what do I want to do? And I could find ways to fill my time. But it took me honestly until I had kids and was watching their own brains unfold and be so like pure and driven by the moment and by every experience that they wanted to engage in or not, that I actually started to consider that kind of freedom for myself. And I still do not have a hobby. I am seeking one. If anyone has any.
Okay, so I was actually going to say, so like, give me three things that like you became interested in. So it's a work in progress. You are still.
Yeah, you know what? I am owning my interests. I'm doing better. I do spend time just like fully not doing anything. And that actually for me is a huge accomplishment where I just sit. I really enjoy, you know, reading in certain like niches, and I really enjoy like writing for myself. And, but yeah, I still don't fully feel even free to answer like, what am I interested in? And I'm 41 years old. So that is not an experience. I can't explain what I want for my kids, but I know that I don't want them to not be able to answer that question in their 40s.
Yeah. Well, I think you have a really great way, at least on social media, of presenting your interests, even if it doesn't seem like that for you. But you're an amazing cat companion and bird YouTubing connoisseur. And I feel like you could probably win a game show on British murder mysteries.
Absolutely.
I mean, there's several things we could go into there.
Right. You're right. I'm exploring. And it's fun.
You live in a snow globe, so I cannot get that snow globe out of my mind. Even when it's not snowy, I still think of your little slice of heaven on the Northern Peninsula.
Oh yeah, we're always a snow globe. Especially in the summer, we're like, get outside! It's coming! It's coming back!
Yeah.
One thing we wanted to cover was like, what happens if you start questioning unschooling, or unschooling feels like not the right term or word.
Yes. So what do you think? What do you think happens for you when you start questioning whether or not unschooling in the purest form is for you?
I think that the first thing that happened when I started having thoughts like that is that I felt like, damn it, you know, I don't want to always be not fitting in. You know, like I want to sort of relax into something and be in a community where everything everyone else is doing and saying, I'm like, yeah, me too. Because, you know, potentially that's partially stemming from some of these things where it's like, I never had clarity about what my own interests are. And I've never been like able to kind of have community around something like that, like a club or a, you know, something you would join and feel really excited about. But also I think it made me like, well, I've gotten so much from unschooling. Like unschooling led me to the idea of unschooling and the writing about unschooling led me to so much deschooling inside myself, like undoing my connection to expectations, undoing my connection to learning as like a linear process, undoing my connection to school as a default place for children to be. And then, you know, the rabbit hole of then it starts having you ask questions about, well, what do I actually think about capitalism? And what do I think about liberation? And it's like this huge unraveling. And so to start thinking like, well, some of what, you know, more purist unschoolers are saying does not relate for me felt sort of like almost a betrayal, or like, you know,
right.
I don't want to be a bad unschooler. Again, some of these schoolish thoughts of like doing it right. When in reality, I think what I've come to see, and what I'm trying to see as I navigate what parts of unschooling might not actually work as purely for us, is this was a doorway for me to see my life differently, for me to see my kids as whole people, and for me to see systems around us and the way they interact with each other intentionally and unintentionally. What happens after that is not, you know, a pass fail on if I unschooled. It's
right.
It's just another step in me experiencing this part of my life where I'm overlapping and living with my children as in as connected, like we said at the top, of a way as possible, connected to what they need, connected to what I need, connected to what we're feeling. Knowing that there's no way I'm going to look back at it in 10, 20 years and think I got everything right.
Right. I think, first, thank you for sharing that. And I think that one of the ways that this sort of thought process unravels for me with taking and leaving parts of unschooling is within the context of community, because we cannot just exist purely in a self-directed community, an unschooling community.
Right.
My family, we're global citizens. We move from country to country and all over the place. So it would be impossible. And this last move, this past year, has been a true testament to not having in-person community for the purposes of people who are like us. And it just illuminates so much about how different the two worlds are, and having to straddle those two worlds. It's such a paradox.
Mm-hmm.
But also I think it can limit us when we're looking for a specific type of community, because we want to be validated and seen. And those are all really, those are valid reasons to want a community that is like yours, like, you know, that is like you and mirrors your family's efforts, but it can limit us and make us not want to be in certain community. And I know you have a very rich home learning community in your actual like neighborhood.
Yep.
And certainly everyone doesn't unschool, right?
No, they don't. Absolutely not. Yep.
Right. So you have to be able to be with, like, for lack of better words, like the gen pop, you know, like,
absolutely.
you do.
And, you know, one thing I've talked about in a few places that you and I've also talked about, that is like when my kids joined organized sports a couple of years ago, it was our first, like, you know, true immersion in that kind of more mainstream community. And that absolutely did probably open up my eyes to some places where I could release some of the unschooling things that weren't working for me, because I could see us in another context and they were doing just fine. And I didn't need to feel as reliant on that homogeneity of community. I didn't need it to be like, we have to be with unschoolers so that we're understood. I think you're absolutely correct that having the luxury of that, that we can, you know, on certain days of the week, be immersed in our unschooling community, our, you know, self-led or self-led-ish community of people who've decided to come together. I mean, we have, you know, in total, like 70 children. That's a lot of kids for my kids to see doing at least some version of our life, right? And that is very validating, and it is really affirming. And particularly for the parents in the community that are newer to this, it's incredibly life-giving for them to be able to have these conversations in person. That being said, I also think that there can become in any, not just an unschooling or homeschooling at all, but in any like community based on sameness, there can become this sort of sense that you're only safe or only seen or only okay with people who are living that same way or in a similar way. Mm. And in fact, that is not the case, at least for me or for my family. And what I've come to kind of feel is that like I need people to be respectful of our family. That's, you know, the baseline for them to be in our life. I need them to treat my children with the respect they would treat a peer. And I need them to accept what our life is. That doesn't mean they can't have questions though, right? Like I also am open to them being curious about how we live. And I also might have questions for them. And what really feels a little bit hard sometimes in certain unschooling conversations, by no means all, but you know, once you get into these very intentional and connected communities, is that it can feel very like judgmental. It can feel like people's appraisal of what non-homeschoolers or non-unschoolers are doing is judgment. And I am not one comfortable with that because A, it's a huge privilege for me to be able to do this on so many levels. B, there's no way this would work for everyone, even if everyone could do it.
Right.
And that's okay. And see what could I have claimed to have learned from unschooling if now I claim to know everything and know the way, you know, people should do something. That would be very, you know, incongruent with this idea of us all being free people, free to learn what we need to learn. So for me, getting outside of unschooling a little bit, now that we are solidly in trust about self-direction, has meant that not only can I be free to be in community with people that I just feel connected to, regardless of what our connection is based on, but also it's given me this like reassurance that my children actually aren't isolated, weird, unschooled, societal outcasts, but in fact, they can choose to make connections with anyone they feel like it. But the difference is, I think the main difference in the gift unschooling gave us is that they know that that choice is theirs. They're not going to be put into a sport or a activity or a club against their will. And because of that, I think the choice element that every activity they're in, every community they're in is their choice, kind of takes away this, you know, sense, this adult sense, like, oh, they're different, they're whatever. They don't care. They don't care. They know they're different. Trust me.
Yeah.
But they're cool with it as long as the community they're learning to get to know is one they've chosen to be a part of. The luxury of having a homeschool and unschool community here where I am locally has been immense for me, particularly in those earlier years. But I also think that one of the things of that I personally wanted to avoid in public school is that there is a lot of, you know, partially by design and partially by default, because I know that there's a lot of kids and people are doing their very best to care for them, but there's a lot of like separation, right? They're separated by age.
Yeah.
You're often separated by gender and you're separated by like interest groups, you know, so there's just like a lot of segmenting that happens in school that I personally wanted to avoid. Like I wanted my kids to be in community with people they want to be with, not like someone who's also born that year and is also a girl, or you know what I mean? So I think intentionally choosing to, I guess, integrate, is that a strong word, with people who don't do school the way we do or don't avoid school the way we do, I guess, is a valuable muscle to build for us and for our kids.
It is.
Yeah.
It is. It really is. It's always kind of kept my finger on the pulse of like, reality.
Yeah.
And I mean that because
yeah.
You can spin out into non-reality things pretty easily if you stay isolated and secluded from the general population and how things are done.
Absolutely. I'm very good
yeah.
at that.
But I like to stretch that muscle too by when with those people and in community with people who don't live like us. Like, I don't use the sort of words and like shorthand and jargon that I would use with you in reference to education or anything like that. And so it sort of takes things down to a more like just basic human level. And a lot of times people just would be curious and get curious about my relationship with my children.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of like, tell me more about like why you didn't just ground them for that or,
right.
you know, whatever.
Right.
And that helps like cross, you know, lines of the separation to bring an idea that wasn't packaged as an alternative schooling idea to someone, but just a relationship thing that they observed and were like, oh, I never really thought about doing that.
Yeah. And I also found like, for example, there's certain like introductory conversations where I don't even use the word unschooling or, you know what I mean? I don't even want to, you know, I don't need to get in the weeds like that with every single person that's like, oh, what grade are your kids in? You know? I just say like, oh, we don't go to school. And then that opens up enough questions right there.
Right.
But I think that, you know, what happens is that I get a chance to, it's not even about my kids most of the time in those conversations or what I can share is not about my kids, because one of the, you know, most connective things that I have with my kids is the absolute realization that I cannot speak on their behalf. But what I can do is like, tell people like, hey, I'm sticker chart. I'm like sticker chart of the year. I'm straight A student. I'm like teacher's pet my entire life. And I now believe that those grades meant nothing about me, not even good things. Like they didn't mean anything. And when I get to like, and like, I'll say it like a joke and I'll make it light and we all have a chuckle. But I also think what I'm trying to say to people is like, you don't have to worry. If your gut is not worried about your kids, you don't have to worry about their grades. Like this, I'm trying to like give them even an iota of the relief I'm experiencing by being at least a few steps disconnected from those kind of measures to people who I know who like this kid maybe didn't make the honor roll or are struggling in a certain topic, but I know that they can see how awesome their kid is. And it feels very incongruent for them to have to think like, am I doing something wrong? Do we need more help? Is this mean I'm a bad parent? Based on these external measures of their child who I can see them looking at and like loving and knowing and like, I can tell they know that means nothing about something being wrong with their kid, but hearing it from someone who's not in their home and who is doing life a little differently can honestly, I can see it a little bit sometimes, like their shoulders relax, you know, and it's not like a revolution in that moment, but it might be sort of a small validation for them. And it's something I can share with them. And if I was a little more closed off to, oh, they won't get it and I don't get what they're doing and judging their choices, assuming they're judging my choices, that kind of conversation could never be had.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, being in community with just the like geographically close people to us is really important outside of whether or not we have deep conversations like that or exchanges like that about each other's, you know, families or children. And I think it's a huge part of unschooling. And one of the things that, I don't know, sometimes unschooling it's such a loaded term that I think when people hear it, they think like cut off from society. You don't know how to like be with people, you think that everything should just be your way, they should just get to do whatever they want, you know, all the things that people say.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're in community with the people around you, Like you go in and out of the library, and like for us, we go in and out of the fruit and vegetable shop and in and out of the butcher and in and out of all of these places. And we have to be in community with these people. We don't exist in a vacuum. And so many conversations come up and new things are learned, and we hear people, you know, speaking a new language and learn about a new place that, you know, we hadn't heard of, or get advice from someone about what to try at the market. Or there's so much that is rich in being in your actual community as an unschooler, that I wish that more people would recognize that and not think that it's just being isolated and cut off, you know?
So do you think that like the term itself is, I mean, for you personally, like, do you think it's like the term itself is limiting in the sense that one, it's perceived a certain way, and two, within the unschooling community, there's certain expectations? Or do you feel like it wouldn't matter? Like we could create and evolve 100 terms and
that's the one.
Yeah.
And I just think it's the nature of social media, the gatekeepy sort of nature of like needing something to be pure, which we should investigate the roots of needing things to be pure and like needing things to be very prescriptive. And like, it's so the antithesis actually of unschooling and de-schooling, right, to like apply a schoolishness regimented thought to a theory that is supposed to be applied with like personhood in mind, mm-hmm, and humanity. And like, we're not robots. We can't live in theory. You use the theory to sort of inform how you approach your relationships.
Yeah. So do you think, like, now I'm interviewing you.
Yeah. Okay. I love this. This is good.
So do you think that like the reason that for those of us who have been like in various forms of unschooling community or various forms of unschooling investigation and thinking and kind of like, you know, integrating the philosophy in our lives in the ways it makes sense, when we start to feel alienated from the term or from certain parts of the community, do you think it's because we've evolved? Do you think it's because some people are living too much in the philosophy and not in the real life? You know what I mean?
Maybe a bit of both.
Right.
Obviously, I think more of the even thought about it and like not being, feeling like you might be like, I'm not sure that I agree with this part of what the community is saying anymore, feeling distant from, you know, the initial framework that was like really, you know, really very unschooling, you know. I think part of that is that we're just all so connected and knowing what everybody's doing, not necessarily, you know, play by plays, but for some people it's play by plays. Mm-hmm. And we're watching each other and observing each other. And I think it's kind of cyclical when you're on social media to go into these patterns of investigating what parts work for you and what parts don't. I think a lot of it happens without you knowing it, if you're not super invested in whether or not you think other people think you're unschooling correctly.
Right.
I think when you sort of remove yourself from that, you are taking and leaving bits, but you're not necessarily intellectualizing it in a way, right, and like picking it apart to say like, oh, this part doesn't work for me anymore.
Yeah.
Maybe just more like it just kind of falls away, you know?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, is that I think where it becomes more like a lived reality versus a sort of a philosophy you're trying to understand is when it isn't in the forefront of your mind in any of your day-to-day interactions. I find myself thinking about, or like, you know, calling back on like, oh, something Akilah said, or, you know, something I read in Untigering, or something from a Peter Gray blog or whatever, when I'm in certain situations. Like, I have to apply it in my mind a lot when I'm like now that I'm like some kind of sports mom against my will a little bit. Like, I have to like center.
I love this for you.
Like, I literally had this whole internal dialogue recently where I was cheering for one of my kids, a very normal thing to do. And I was like, what am I cheering for? You know, like, what do I want here? Like, why am I getting like feeling anxiety rising in my chest? Like, why am I feeling like physical discomfort? Why do I want to like, you know, run from this room screaming. And it's partly because in any of these situations that are kind of, you know, what I would say in very strong air quotes, normal childhood, like milestone things like team sports or whatever, I'm immediately drawn back to the way we were used to being evaluated and the way like I put value on myself and like, you know, am I cheering just because my kid is having a good time or am I secretly like hoping they win and wanting them to score and wanting people to see how much better they've gotten? And am I actually purely like celebrating an experience for my child or am I being drawn into evaluating them and then wanting to show people the evaluation? And, you know, so in those times, I do kind of like start calling back. I'm like, okay, but remember when you read this? You got to just together. But in my day-to-day life with, you know, in relationship with my kids and in connection to what their needs may be and how I as a person, you know, of influence in their life can connect them to those needs, I am not thinking, is this unschooling? Is this not? When they say like, I want to go, like, how do I learn more about this? And we look at a class with a teacher and there's a curriculum. I don't think like, well, you know, what if they don't want to do it that way? And is this unschooling? I just do it. But there's definitely moments and times where it's more like necessary for me to call back to those learnings that had changed my thinking in order to stay grounded. But it's not for any purpose of ticking off boxes.
Right.
Yeah.
I was going to say maybe a third option on the cheering is that you're just swept away with the group, right? Like a large group of human beings in this facility surrounded by a circle of ice and people skating around on it and everyone's cheering and like hot dogs are being sold. And like, I mean, how do you not get swept away in that?
I don't know. I'm still reflecting on it. It's new for me.
Like, I don't even like sports. I literally do not even like sports. But I could feel myself getting swept away in your Instagram story. So
you're right. There are possible options I haven't considered.
Yes. So it sounds like we got really unschooled to start deschooling or unschooling.
Yeah.
To arrive back at unschooling. I don't want to get rid of the term, if that's what you were asking. I don't want to get rid of the term, but I think it has its problems. But as you know, I'm into multiplicity. So a lot of things are true at the same time.
Absolutely. Yeah. I don't want to get rid of the term either because I think that the actual like wording and having the word school in it is powerful in terms of like calling those of us in who did grow up in a very schoolish way and want to hear about what is there that's different than that.
Yeah.
And I like it because it's specifically different than homeschooling, which obviously can be done a million billion different ways that we could never define. However, does imply in the minds of non-homeschoolers or non-unschoolers school at home. And which almost no one I know is doing.
Right.
But I think that where I'm going as I spiral around that, like, yes, unschooling led me to deschooling. And that has been a continued ongoing process that is so beneficial to me as a human. But then I find the problems that I may experience with unschooling and I circle away again. I think what happens for me is that at this point in our journey with it, in my personal journey, and then in the journey I'm going alongside my kids with, is that that word school is so irrelevant to us at this point. Mm-hmm. It's not a judgment of school. It's literally not a factor in our daily lives. So that is why I tend to say something more vague when people ask us that don't know us, like, we don't do school. And then if they say like, oh, do you homeschool? I say they're self-directed. And I use more general terms like that because that's at this point for us, how far I feel from it being even a choice about school or not school.
Right. I like that explanation. I really do. And I'm with you. I think the word school is important because
Right.
It's not about, you know, being something better than school. It's school is the apparatus by which children are controlled for many hours out of the day. Their biological functions are controlled. The information and data that is input and is allowed to even be expressed is controlled. It is the apparatus by which all of this is a problem, and I reject that. So I have to have that term because school is the problem, unfortunately. At least school as we know it.
Right. Yes.
Yes. Which is another conversation for another day.
Yeah, I was going to say, I have hopes for it, but.
Yeah. There's definitely a lot of conversation around abolition of school. And I think it's a sticky dynamic conversation. I would love to have that. So maybe we can have that conversation.
You know, I'd love to.
That sounds wonderful. Okay. Before I let you go, I want to be respectful of your time. We're coming up on an hour. Where can people find you?
Sure. I share about my life and our life as a family, and particularly the things my kids get up to on Instagram. And my Instagram name is liz.lemonade. It is not an unschooling focused account. I'm not sharing infographics or that kind of thing, but I am sharing pretty openly and pretty frequently the pace of our lives. And for some people that feels helpful and relevant.
Yeah. And it's beautiful to watch.
Well, there is a lot of, I live amongst a lot of beauty and I'm happy to share it. So
one day I'm going to visit. One day it's going to happen.
We're going to have so much fun.
I keep telling you this, but it's going to happen.
I believe you. I fully believe you. And it's marked on my hypothetical calendar.
That's wonderful. I'm so glad that I have a spot marked out for me.
Always.
Thank you so much for making time to talk to me, Lane. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
I'll talk to you again soon.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode, and thanks, Lane, for joining me. Before you go, I have just a couple things to share. First, if you have anything you'd like to share, you want to reach out to me, you can find me on my website, theunschoolfiles.com. There you'll find my email, community offerings, resources around unschooling. The website is always growing, always changing. I've even recently started putting my future plans out into the universe by way of the website, so go check it out. You can still find me on Instagram at The Unschool Files, mostly active in stories. And sometimes I give a glimpse of our life currently in Europe as unschoolers. The Unschool Files is not just a podcast and a zine, though. We are a community. I've recently begun facilitating a really active calendar over on Discord. So if you're looking to connect with other unschooling parents in a virtual space, then come check out the Discord server. Lastly, if you would like to support my work on this podcast and the community building that I do, I would love to see you on Patreon. I was formerly using Patreon as a subscription model for the zine, but I've since migrated all of the zine sales and stuff over to the website, and Patreon is now just going to be a place to financially support all of the work that I do, as it is truly a labor of love. I have really, really fun plans coming up that include unschooling swag, t-shirts, bags, buttons, and patrons are going to be the first to get all the goods. Okay, thank you so much for being here, and you will find links and information to everything that I've mentioned in the show notes. And until next time, stay kind to each other.